The one we begin with is Ong Namo Gurudev Namo, which means I bow to that inner guru, I bow to the divine teacher within. And we always start class with that, and that links us to the lineage of yogis to empower the practice.
Welcome to the Let It Flow podcast, a place where we discuss the ancient wisdom of holistic health, yoga, and Ayurveda in a modern day context to help you align mind, body, and spirit and shine as your brightest self. I'm your host, Taryn Bond, for this week's solo episode. I am so grateful to share this moment with you. Let's dive within. For today's episode, I sat down with Kundalini yoga teacher Pam Ewald after a lovely Saturday morning class at her Kundalini Yoga studio in Denver, Colorado, to get the inside scoop on all things Kundalini Yoga. What it is, why we practice, the benefits of Kundalini, and so much more. In a beautiful, light studio over cups of warm yogi tea, Pam, who has taught Kundalini and Hatha Yoga, sound healing, and other forms of energetic healing for over 30 years, gives us her insight on the practice. In this interview, she shares her personal experience of being one of the very first yoga teachers in LA, the importance of raising one's vibration, the long-term personal effects that she has witnessed through her commitment to the practice, the importance of living a healthy lifestyle, and answers all of our burning questions about why we wear white in Kundalini class, the importance of wearing a turban, what a Kundalini awakening even is, and so much more. Pam has so much wisdom to share on this topic and has truly been living in dedication to the practice and lifestyle for so many years. She is a shining example of what it means to be a seasoned yogi. I am so honored to have had the chance to interview Pam, and I cannot wait to share this episode with you. Let's dive within. Hello.
Hi.
Thank you so much for joining me and doing this interview today.
Well, thank you. It's an honor.
We just finished your morning Kundalini class. It was amazing.
Well, thank you for joining us.
Yeah. So before we get started, would you like to just introduce yourself and your name and what you do?
Sure. I'm Pam Ewald, or my spiritual name is Sangeeta Kaur, which means one who loves to chant names of God, which is very appropriate because I love kirtan and chanting. And I teach Kundalini yoga and Hatha yoga, and I do all kinds of healing work like massage, Reiki, Thai massage, trigger point, shiatsu, reflexology, just a lot of different healing modalities, sound healing.
What got you started on this journey?
Oh boy. So I would say as a young child, all I ever really wanted was like enlightenment and peace, that inner peace and happiness. So, I made this little tree house, and I'd go sit up on my little perch and just contemplate energy. And I guess, you know, at the time I didn't know it was meditation, but I would just go and sit and contemplate, and I was just striving for enlightenment. And so, you know, I'd go to church with my family, and it just didn't resonate with me. Like, what is that separateness? God up in the sky and fear-based, and so it just didn't resonate with me, but I thought I was kind of crazy thinking of energy and spirituality and how we were all connected. And so when I was about 19, I was at a friend's house, and he had this book, Practical Spirituality, and I remember sitting out on his front lawn and opened it up, and I was like, oh my gosh, there's books about this, I'm not crazy. And so that began my journey on the spiritual path and healing, that there was information out there. And so from there, shortly after that, I was in Telluride, Colorado, and this Sikh man, I didn't know he was a Sikh at the time, was in front of us playing saxophone, and he invited my girlfriends and I over to his friend's house that night after the concert, and they were all drumming. And the next morning they got up and all made food, and he was out there. He was either doing Kundalini yoga or Qigong, I'm not sure. And I was just watching him in this field of wildflowers. And I was like, this is the life for me. So at the time I was working at a clothing store. And so I quit, and my boyfriend had moved to LA. And this guy in his band came over and said, you're just like my girlfriend, you should meet her. And so she came over and invited me to her hatha yoga class, a Bikram class. And before that, though, when I had moved to LA, I was already meditating and practicing the yoga sutras, like, you know, non-harming. I had become a vegetarian and, you know, just trying to speak kind words and just all the yoga sutras. And so I went to her hatha class, and I loved it because my background in college was a dancer. So I just loved the movement, and I just felt so uplifted. And so a month after that, she asked me to start teaching, because at the time there weren't a lot of teachers in LA. I mean, now there's a billion. But so I started teaching a month later, hatha yoga. And in that class, I said, you should meet my friend. And so he was this man from Panama. And he was this raw foods chef, and he was opening a raw foods restaurant. So I started working there and learned about nutrition and, you know, using food as medicine and raw food and juicing. So I think because I was longing so much for enlightenment and just pursuing a spiritual path, it was just, here you go, you know, it was just coming to me. And so, then we moved back to Boulder, and then I got certified in hatha yoga. And then my boyfriend at the time had moved to, we moved to Jamaica for him to teach music, and it fell through. And when we came back, just God told me, you're going to massage school and you're going in New Mexico. I mean, I didn't think of it. I didn't pursue it. I had never had a massage or any body work. And so we went to New Mexico, and I went to the New Mexico School of Natural Therapeutics, and that's where I learned all those different healing modalities. And so I've been doing that for about 30 years. And then about 20 years ago, I came across Kundalini yoga up in Estes Park with Gurmukh from LA, and I just loved it. I loved how it incorporated the mantra, meditation, and pranayama, and it just felt like it dug so deep in just one class. So then I became certified a few years after I started taking it. So, but the Kundalini thing, when I look back on my childhood, there were little tidbits, though, like that man I met in Telluride who was a Sikh, that I knew nothing about Sikhs. And then when I was a little girl, I was like 4 or 5, I'd have my friends get on all fours and do breath of fire, which I didn't know what it was.
Wow.
But yeah, I was a weird little girl. But
sounds like you always knew.
I was tuned in. I didn't know what I was doing, but yeah.
Wow, that's an awesome story.
Yeah, and then too, another link was when I was living in L.A., the most beautiful Thanksgiving I ever had was at the, I think it was called the Golden Temple. The Sikhs had a vegetarian restaurant in, it was either in Beverly Hills or Hollywood. And we went, my boyfriend and I, and there were long tables, and it was just a free feast, a vegetarian feast on Thanksgiving. And, you know, there were people from Beverly Hills, there were homeless people, there were just all walks of life just sitting at one table. And it was just so beautiful. So, you know, that was, and at the time I didn't really know they were Sikhs. And then I had also, the first yoga book I ever bought was Yoga, the Sadhana Guidelines, the Kundalini book from the 70s. I still have it. It's totally tattered. But that was the first yoga book I bought, and I didn't know, you know, anything about Kundalini at the time. So I had all these little, you know, little tidbits of it that I didn't know. It was just getting me ready to teach Kundalini. So,
wow.
A long story of how I got here.
Yeah, no, that's amazing though. I love that it was such a part of your path all the way before you even knew what it was.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
So now you teach Kundalini more than Hatha or
I teach about the same amount of classes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
For someone who has maybe done Hatha yoga and like has done vinyasa before but doesn't really know, what makes Kundalini different from Hatha yoga classes?
So especially now, I feel like a lot of the Hatha yoga has been maybe a little diluted and a lot of classes don't incorporate the breathing exercises or meditation. A lot of times it's just the poses. With the Kundalini, most classes we do breathing exercises, like I said, and the meditation and poses. But the poses are different than Hatha, as some are similar, but a lot of times you're moving at a fast pace, like maybe your arms up and down, and it's each one is timed. And so you're not just holding a pose, you're not just moving from one pose to another. And with Kundalini yoga, they're called kriyas, and we go by the book, and they're precise, in a precise order to move the energy. And each kriya, that's the set of exercises, they have like a different healing theme or property of what they want it's going to invoke in you. And so that's how they're different and similar.
So with Kundalini, I guess it's kind of a, not a loaded question, but kind of a big question, but what would be the goal? Why would people start practicing?
Well, for me, it was just, it felt like I said, it went deeper. And by using the breath work, it's so powerful, and the different mudras or the hand gestures, the different fingertips, and they really work on your glandular system and the glands of higher consciousness. So you like your pituitary and pineal gland, and the meditations all have, like I said, different healing themes. So to me, it's medicine. So if you really want to, Hatha yoga does it, but it's like Kundalini, I feel like, is so powerful that it, if you want to get rid of all your garbage, you know, your emotional patterns and your mental garbage, it's a really good way to clear all of that subconscious mind and maybe all your mental habits, your emotional habits, to clear all that so you can be at peace. It's like self-therapy. It's something you can do every day to help yourself, you know, instead of having to go to somebody, which can be helpful too, but it's healing yourself and a tool that you can use to just feel better and reach those higher levels of consciousness, to unblock all that stagnant energy, all that negative energy, all the pain.
So it's like a deep cleansing.
Yes.
Prayer, like an energetic, not just physical.
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah. So it does work the physical. That's the thing I find different too. Although Hatha yoga does that, I feel like Kundalini really works the glandular system and the nervous system. Mm-hmm. Too. So, but that's what I really noticed when I started doing it, you know, by holding your arms up for a long time, it was so hard for me, even though I had a strong muscles, but I just noticed that nervous system was reprogramming itself. So it was really hard at first to do some of the things, because it was the nervous system, not just the muscles. So
I've definitely noticed that when we're practicing, that things that I think would be easy because I'm like, oh, I have muscles here, end up being so difficult.
Yes.
And then it's like, wait, is this nervous system? Is this me getting in my head that's making it hard? Or is my body actually tired?
All the above.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I remember Gurmukh, my first teacher, should be like, if you want to put your arms down, all I can say is don't. And I'd be like, oh my gosh. And then should say there'd be a certain point where if you move through the pain, you can keep going. And I didn't believe it at first, but you know, after, I don't know how long of practice, I was like, oh my gosh, I can keep doing this. So it is a lot. It is your mind gets in the way, and also you are just reprogramming.
Yeah. I definitely feel probably more the beginning stages of that, but it's really amazing. People talk about this concept of like Kundalini awakening.
Mm-hmm.
Is that something that the practice leads you to? What's your experience with that?
Well, and for everybody, it's different. Yes, it can on a subtle level or on a profound level. It can be all in one class or it can take time. You know, it's just unblocking that stagnant energy. So the Kundalini is the energy at the base of the spine. That's just a way to describe it. And then to awaken it, it moves up the spine to the crown or to the thousand-petaled lotus where, you know, you're in that state of bliss. That's the point of Kundalini yoga. And just the more you do it, the more it's clearing that heavy energy or that stagnant energy to call it enlightenment or bliss or just feeling better on a daily basis. So yes, that is the goal, but you know, it's all about just feeling good and coming back into alignment with source and feeling good. It's just a tool to get there. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, with the way things are in the world, all that external input we're getting, sometimes it's hard for us to stay connected to source. It's like focusing on the negative things kind of pinches you off, or stuff you might hold on from the past, or just all that negative programming. It's a way to clear it out so that you can just feel better and, you know, raise your vibration, because, you know, all those negative things make you feel icky and heavy, and Kundalini helps to clear all those blocks to make you feel better and, you know, ultimately enlightenment, which to me is just, you know, feeling good and blissed out. And
Yeah, I mean, it sounds pretty good. In Kundalini, there is this idea of lightness and kind of purity, which is really prevalent in yoga. But I feel like even from someone who does a lot of different types of yoga, Kundalini kind of takes a whole new approach to that purity and that cleansing of the self, like in all aspects. So specifically something that I've always been interested in, but I think a lot of others are interested in too, is the fact that Kundalini is traditionally practiced wearing all white.
Mm-hmm.
What would be the purpose of that?
Right. It's a sign of purity. And it also, you know, we all have auric fields, which is your energy body surrounding you. And so the color white is like light. So it just strengthens and expands your auric field.
Mm.
So, yeah. And also one of the things, just on a purely physical level and having a level of awareness, because you're wearing all white, you really have to be aware to not get it dirty, you know? Just bringing you into awareness of like every move you're making, you know, like getting out of my car when I wear white, I can't touch the back of my calf to the door when it's dirty, and just a different kind of awareness too. Yeah. So those two things.
I never thought of that, but it really does. You have to be more mindful of even your physical body, what you're doing with it. Cause yeah, you don't want to ruin your white.
Yes.
Which that is such a awesome metaphor. I never thought of that.
Or if you're eating in white.
Yeah.
I cheat a little when I do my gong bath. We usually go to dinner first. And so I'll wear my white, but I'll put something over while we're eating.
Yeah.
So I don't get it dirty.
Yeah.
But.
And what about the whole turban on the head?
So,
wear one personally? I know you wear something over your head.
I just wear a head covering or a scarf or even a knitted hat. And the purpose of the head covering is to consolidate the energy. So when the Kundalini awakens, it can get stuck. And it, like the thousand-petaled lotus, you want to, which is your crown of your head, it will invert. And then it, like the amrit, the nectar, the bliss will rain down back in you and on you. And from personal experience, when I was taking my training, I was like, yeah, right. What is a piece of cloth going to do with the energy? I just thought that was kind of silly. But I would get headaches every day in my teacher training, and I'm not one to get headaches. So I was like, okay, I'll try wearing a head wrap, and I didn't get headaches anymore. So there's something to it, just for my own personal experience.
Wow. So it's like, it's keeping the energy within your system?
Yeah, so it arises, and then you want it to, when it opens at your crown, to trickle the list out energy to, or the amrit, the nectar of the thousand petaled lotus. So you have a thousand petaled lotus on the crown of your head, and then when it's awakened, it turns back down to pour that energy or rain that, you know, amrit, that nectar of bliss back down on you.
Wow.
So, yeah. And that the turbans, that's a Sikh thing. So I'm not a Sikh, so I don't wear a turban. But I just wrap a scarf or, like I said, a hat or knitted cap.
Okay. So you mentioned Sikh and Sikhism. Does Kundalini come from Sikh, or does it come from the same lineage as just sutras and other types of yoga?
So the style that I teach is by Yogi Bhajan Kundalini, and he was a Sikh, and he's the one who brought it to the United States from India. But you don't have to be a Sikh to practice Kundalini yoga, and not all Sikhs teach Kundalini yoga. I don't know if they all do Kundalini yoga, but you can teach Kundalini without being a Sikh. But the mantras are from the Sikh tradition. Most of the mantras, which are the chants that we do, are from the Sikh tradition. So they kind of intertwine, but you don't have to be a Sikh to practice or to teach. So, but that's something I did resonate with when I came across the Kundalini practice, because I'd already been a vegetarian, and then just the lifestyle, the way of being in the world, you know, like the pure living and stuff. I resonated with that. So.
And so you mentioned the mantras. Can you give like an example of one of the mantras you use in class?
Yeah, the one we begin with is Ong Namo Guru Dev Namo, which means I bow to that inner guru. I bow to the divine teacher within. And we always start class with that. And that links us to the lineage of yogis to empower the practice. And that's another thing that I really liked about the Kundalini, that it has kept a lineage, because a lot of times in other yogas, we've lost that lineage. And I feel like that empower keeps the practice powerful.
How about the Sat Nam? What does that mean?
That means I am truth. Truth is my identity. Basically just like I am that consciousness. I am divine.
That's nice. Do you find that you think of these, or that they come to you, or just that they resonate in other areas of your life when you're not practicing or teaching?
I chant all the time, pretty much 24/7. I'm chanting in the car. And
wow.
That's awesome. Yeah. And they all have different, again, different healing themes too. So if there is, you know, something going on in my life, I'll look up a meditation that will have a chant to work on that specific thing. So, yeah.
Do you think that Kundalini is something that you have to practice pretty regularly? Or do you think that you can practice sometimes and get benefits and then go back when you feel like you need it? How would you recommend somebody who's like, I want to start, but I don't know how much I need to do it?
Well, with all practices and all spiritual practices, it is best to do every day. And with the Kundalini tradition, we do a morning sadhana, which is the morning practice at 3 a.m. for 2.5 hours. But when people are new, I have them tell them to start with Sat Kriya, which is this 3-minute meditation that totally balances your chakras and moves the energy, because a lot of people can't, you know, don't want to commit to 2.5 hours or getting up at 3 a.m. So just doing something, I feel they'll notice how good they feel. You know, and it's just a great way to start the day, any kind of spiritual practice, and in the day with a meditation, because you're just beginning your day on a clean slate by clearing and linking in to source. And at the end of the day, clearing, you know, all that negative input you might have during the day or feeling icky, just clear it. So you can just come back to source. So yes, I would recommend a morning and evening, even if it's just a few minutes, you know, and then work up to it, because then people will do it. I think they can do it for 3 minutes, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
What about, so the Kriyas, why are they in this specific order? And what, like, what's the purpose behind their organization?
So it's all about moving the energy. That's it.
Okay.
Simple but profound.
Yeah.
Because we can't, like, take one out, an exercise out or add one. Some of them, the things, there are standalone exercises, like I just mentioned, Sat Kriya. But for the most part, you don't want to take them apart or add anything. You can add a breathing exercise, a pranayama, and you can add a meditation, but you can't just throw in a pose in the middle of a Kriya because they are set up in a way to move the energy. So, and they all have different healing themes, each Kriya. Like today we did one to challenge the ego. But that's why it's such medicine for me. You know, if you, there's one for releasing anger, there's one to open the heart, there's one for the kidneys. I mean, whatever ails you, you can find a Kriya or meditation to help you heal yourself.
How many Kriyas have been created?
Oh my gosh, I don't know. I have probably 10 books with probably 20 Kriyas in each of them. And then I have this big fat book of pranayams, breathing exercises and meditation, and there's hundreds. So I don't even know. I have no idea how many are even made. There's hundreds and hundreds of them. So I haven't even seen all of them.
Wow.
Yeah.
Do you find that you have favorites or ones that work better for you, or do you try to kind of evenly try out different ones?
I have favorite ones, and then, you know, with my own practice, depending on what's going on, I'll do one for months, sometimes years, depending on how tenacious that thing is that I need to, you know, release. But there are my favorites that are just, there's one I really like for, I think it's for the glandular system, that it's just three poses, but you do breath of fire for each one. So it's like supercharged, but short, you know, it's like, it's just like really powerful, but condensed. So I like that one. So, and it just different phases of my life, you know, different things, what's going on. And some are easier to teach than others as far as teaching them. So
I'm still pretty new to Kundalini, but I've heard in Kundalini classes before that there's almost this goal to release negative energy and negative things in the subconscious by bringing it up. So almost like, in a way, trying to trigger negative things to come up to the surface, or negative memories.
Mm-hmm.
Is that something? Like, I had one Kundalini class where it was focused on like tapping into unhealed things from the childhood,
mm-hmm.
and bringing that to the surface so that mm-hmm. it can be released and turned into light.
Mm-hmm.
But do you think that that's a necessary part of the practice, or do you personally like find that you try to pull things up, or do you just let it come through?
I personally don't intentionally pull it up. I will just, work, you know, find a Kriya to work on things that are up. And I feel like in a way where we can move beyond that. But I think when you're first starting a spiritual practice, and maybe it just changes in our life too, that we do get things stuck in our subconscious, and even our body, you know, the physical pain can be pain from those emotions and blockage in that, those higher states of consciousness. So by doing the, you know, the Kundalini yoga, even if you're not intentionally thinking like, okay, I'm going to release that past trauma, just by doing it, it's going to release it, because you're the act of the breathing and the movement and the meditations are clearing that, whether you're making an intention of what that specific thing is. It sounded like you did a Kriya that was very specific. So I, you know, it's both things. I think when we're starting out, we might need some heavy duty physical and pranayama and meditation to move the get that stuff out of our system, because we do hold it in our physical body and our mental body and emotional body. So by doing these kriyas helps to move it out. But then I think we can hopefully get at a point where we can just link up without, you know, diving into the pain again, and just, you know, link up with source without having to go backwards in time. So I really think it's where you're at.
That makes sense.
Because if you're really holding on to that, you had a lot of trauma. I think if you just try, you know, thinking positive thoughts, or just try linking up with the divine, it can be hard. So sometimes I think we need to dig in and release all that. But at a certain point, I think we can just, okay, I'm just going to choose this thought and, you know, choose to feel good. But through meditation, we get to that point of feeling good. So did that answer your question?
No, I know
it's kind of a complex thing, but.
No, that makes sense.
Okay.
Since I know you've been practicing for a really long time, all across the board, all the different energy work and healing things that you've done and that you teach, what changes have they brought for your daily life?
Just feeling better and being able to feel better quicker, and being able to, like, if a conflict comes up, to not go so deep dark into it and just shift the energy more quickly and not hold on to conflicts or issues, you know, just to move through them quicker and stay feeling good longer and more consistently. So, you know, it's just like layers of an onion. That first time I went to the Hatha class, I was so blissed out. And I was like, oh, I've reached enlightenment. You know? And for 3 months, I was just flying high. And then it was like, boom, crash, you know. And then just, you know, doing the practice and different practices, just a daily cleansing. And, you know, but it just, I know I don't go as dark or as negative or as heavy anymore. It's just the more layers that come off, it's just staying in that lighter, happier state longer. And yeah, and not letting things affect me, as negative things affect me or influence me like they used to. Because I know a lot of us in that do yoga and in the healing work, we're empaths. And so when we feel pain, it's like deep too, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's realizing that you don't have to feel everybody's pain, and that you can, you know, kind of stay in that neutral mind. And
Wow. So,
yeah.
So do you feel like as an empath, having these practices has helped you with boundaries?
Yes. And what's kind of ironic, even though I've been doing this a long, long, long time, just, I mean, 30 some years, just recently, I was like, oh, I'm an empath. I mean, that sounds so duh, but I thought everybody was like this. And then I just came across a video about empaths. I was like, oh,
it makes so much sense.
I was telling my girlfriend, she's like, really? She's you like, didn't know that?
She's like, I think everyone in your life could have told you that.
It's kind of embarrassing. But I just thought that's the way people were. But now it's like, okay, that makes a lot of sense now. And so just that awareness, that has helped me more, like, okay, I'm not in charge of everybody's emotions. I'm not in charge of making them, you know, feel better. I mean, I am in the sense of bringing the Kundalini to help, you know, uplift people. But I mean, just on a daily basis, you know, it's not my job to feel what they're feeling and
mm-hmm. and process it for them.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. So
definitely. With your sound healing work that you do as well, mm-hmm. it's always so amazing, because every time with the bowls and gongs, I feel like, and I know a lot of other people feel this, physical sensation in the body and like the mind always does something a little different. Maybe it's a subconscious, but it feels like time kind of goes away. Can you speak a little bit just about the energetics of sound healing?
Yes, and that's the time going away. That's because you're letting go. Because a lot sometimes, if people are too much in their head, they're like, "Oh my gosh, this is going on forever." Mm. But that timelessness is you just being able to relax into it. And so, sound healing, like Kundalini and other yoga, it's about all about raising your vibration. But with the sound healing, you know, you can just lay there and relax, and it just gets at a very cellular level to release that blocked energy again. So if you feel sensations in your body, it's like, you know, that sound is just going into that cell and softening that stagnant energy. To raise your vibration. That's what all of it is. All the healing, all the yoga, all the mantras, all the pranayams, you know, it just comes down to letting go of that stagnant energy and raising your vibration.
Mm.
So, yeah.
Yeah, that raising your vibration is really like kind of a popular thing a lot of people are talking about, especially it seems like as time goes on, it's becoming more popular. Do you personally, I guess this is more how you feel about it, but do you think that's like a responsibility of everyone to raise their own vibration? Or do you think maybe some people are on a path that involves some sort of enlightening lifestyle? Do you think that raising our vibration as an individual is part of everyone's work?
I think that's the only reason we're here. I think that's why we are all here, just to tap into source energy and at every moment, you know, tap into that. And like today we were talking about intuition and, you know, be guided by that inner guidance. And that's that higher vibration. And it's like we were talking about earlier, it's can be difficult in these times with all the computer and Facebook and you know, it's like it's constant input, and it's difficult not to be impacted by that. And, you know, it can bring you down if you are reading all the news and hearing all that. And I feel like by raising our vibration, we're energetic bodies. We're all vibrations. So by the best work we can do is by raising our vibration, it's going to expand out into the world. So
I agree. I totally think it's the soul's mission, all of us.
Mm-hmm.
Do you feel like with that intuition and that connection to source, as you raise your vibration, that you're more guided and like in communication with something beyond your mind or beyond the physical world?
Yes, definitely. And, you know, in politics, people like to talk about this, talk about that, talk about this. It's like, I feel like this time we're in, it's because of what's going on politically. Hopefully it's having people wake up to listen to their inner guidance and not like whatever side you're on, just forget about all that, you know, tune into your inner guidance, which is always source, which is always of a higher vibration for goodness. That's what's going to change the world, I feel, you know, not relying on this leader, that leader, you know, just tuning in to source and healing yourself. And by doing that, it's going to, you know, affect everybody around you.
Do you think that, I guess, your personal feeling or belief that as more people tune into that, these problems, these really big problems we're having in the world with conflict, do you think it's possible for that to all go away if everyone were to tune in?
Yes, I do. And I mean, I even see it, like, you know, I started on this path. I mean, I was doing things as a kid, but started teaching yoga in 87. And I mean, my boyfriend and I went to this health food store here in Denver that was like one aisle long. And we're like, can you imagine if health food stores were like Safeways? And we couldn't even imagine in a million years back then. You know, there was like one or two in Denver, tiny little things. And now they're all over, you know, and Denver's getting vegan restaurants. Mm. And when I was in LA, there was two vegan restaurants at the time. Now there's tons of raw food and vegan restaurants in LA. And so people are waking up. I mean, like I said, when I was teaching Hatha Yoga in LA, my teacher needed someone to teach. And it's like, I wasn't even certified, but you know, now that's where all the big teachers come out of is LA. And so we are already waking up. It's people are waking up. So I can already see the change, even though it looks like there's a lot of darkness. You know, it, to me, it's just the contrast to help people wake up, to, you know, link up to their divinity.
Yeah.
But it's, I think there's more and more light, even though, you know, it might not look that way. I feel like it's already, we're expanding.
I see it happening, this almost, I guess you could say, like an ascension of all people. Mm-hmm. Everyone is starting to feel a little lighter and see things, and it's touching mm-hmm. something within them, but they're actually listening to that.
Mm-hmm.
And I know for a lot of people maybe that aren't on like a yogic or a spiritual path, they look at this and they say, oh, that's a trend. Like, that's trendy.
Mm-hmm.
Do you feel that it's like yoga and even, I don't know, veganism and the health food kick that people are on? Do you think that's a trend, or do you think that that's more our planet is actually waking up and raising our vibration?
I feel like the mass consciousness of whatever's popular, it just makes it grow.
Mm.
So it's kind of both. I do feel like we're waking up, but by people focusing on those things of whether it's a trend or not, it's just making it expand.
Yeah.
I mean, a spiritual practice and waking up, it's eternal.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I'm a vegan, but I feel like there's a point where you can move beyond all material things and all this doesn't even matter. You could eat and, you know, do whatever, and you just still be enlightened. But I think on the path to that, when you are linked to the divine, you do choose healthier choices.
Personally, I've heard a lot of people kind of come with that argument of, oh, veganism, yoga, everything, that's a fad.
Yeah. I mean, maybe some people do it just because it's trendy, and some people do it to feel better and to raise their vibration and mm-hmm. what vibrates within them. I think it can be both.
And it's true. Whatever gets people to the practice.
Yes.
And gets people to look inside. Yeah. The reason kind of becomes obsolete once people have tuned in.
Yes. Because, you know, a lot of people will come to yoga just to stretch their muscles and then.
Or work out.
Yeah, to work out. And then they'll start like thinking, ooh, I feel better. And then they'll get that little buzz and then they'll just want to keep going back and going back. And so I feel like it just, you know, opens, it's like a little seed that is planted. And then, you know, if they keep doing it from there, they'll go do a meditation. They'll be like, wow, I feel really good. And
yeah, it's like little breadcrumbs.
Yes.
Like, whoa, I just ended up in a whole new world.
Yes.
Yeah. Thank you.
You're welcome.
For people who are interested in starting Kundalini yoga, what tips or advice, things that they could do to start like this week?
I would go to a class mm-hmm. because there's just a lot to know. And so it'd be best to start in a class with a teacher. And we have a Kundalini yoga center in the Highlands. And then there's different classes, you know, all over Denver. And just look up a Kundalini yoga class. Then once you get a feel for it, then you can, you know, pick out a meditation or kriya that you need to do on your own, that you could do on your own. But there's so much to know about it that, you know, you might be overwhelmed. But there are videos too now with, you know, YouTube, which is a good thing about talking about the media and all that input. But now you can look up Kundalini Kriyas. So, but I would still start with a class so you can get the basics and go for a while till you get a feel of, you know, because you're doing all kinds of things that you might not even know what they're talking about on the video. So
yeah,
I would start with a class.
And just out of curiosity, how long does it take to do a training? What is that process like compared to maybe a 200-hour hatha training?
Mine was 8 months. We did 3 weekends for 7 or 8 months. I don't know how many hours. So it's about 6 to 8 months for 3 or 4 days a month. But they do have, like we do in through this center that's in Crestone. Part of it's in Crestone, part of it's here and they do a week or two long there and then weekends again. And then once you get your level one teacher training, then they go on to the deeper studies. And those are great because it's like specific, like level two on relationships or conscious communication. So it just goes deeper into things that you would work on just to live this life, you know, just a deeper study and practice on how we live. So yeah, and those are, I think, a week or two. I think they're a week long.
How can people connect with you personally? You said you don't use really social media. Do you have a website?
Maybe? I don't have a website. I don't have a Facebook.
Good for you.
So if they can just come to my classes at Kundalini Yoga Denver in the Highlands. We do have a website, Kundalini Yoga Denver. And then I teach Kundalini at Karma Yoga, which is also in Denver. So if you go to their websites, that's where I'll be.
Perfect.
Yes.
Great. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you so much. It was an honor.
Yeah, it was a pleasure getting to talk to you and hear your wisdom. I'm like all excited about Kundalini now. I've always kind of felt like drawn to it.
Yes.
But now, yeah, it's starting to kind of fall into place. Thank you for this insight.
You're welcome. Thank you. Thanks. I can see you going and teaching next.
Yeah, maybe someday. Once I get to that place in my practice, maybe.
Thank you. Satnam.
Satnam. Wow, how amazing was that interview? Pam has such awesome insight and really does such a good job explaining the difficult Kundalini concepts in a way that is so easy to understand and begin to implement into our own practice in life. If you're interested in taking one of Pam's Kundalini classes, make sure to check her out if you're ever in Denver, Colorado. Thank you so much for listening, and as always, feel free to reach out if you have any questions, comments, or anything else. Thank you so much for listening and being present today. I hope you have a beautiful day, a beautiful week, and we'll see you next time. Namaste. It's giveaway time. We are giving away a free, private, personalized wellness workshop in a care package complete with handmade essential oil blends from Alana's brand, Radiate Healthy Living, and a painting of your name in Sanskrit with a personalized mantra and some Palo Santo to raise the vibration of your space from Taryn to one lucky listener. The exclusive live workshop will include practices and wisdom from yoga and holistic health, which we will personalize after getting to know you. This amazing giveaway will run until August 4th. All you have to do to enter is leave a rating and review for this podcast with your name, and we will announce the winner on our episode on Monday, August 5th. We are so excited to connect with you.